Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and good morning to those in the Mountain Standard Time and Pacific Standard Time. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Afia Blunt, and the show is called Afia Blunt Credit Consulting. Now, I'm starting the show simply because I love talking to people about credit, how they can better themselves, how they can save money, how they can budget. And I've actually been doing this since I left my job in March of 2012. Well, I've been doing it longer than that, but on a personal level and with my own business since March of 2012. The name of my business is called Luxury for Less Credit Consulting. And you could check the Better Business Bureau. I have an A rate standing with them. You could check Yellow Pages. I have several reviews on there. But I'm changing the name to Afia Blunt Credit Consulting because I'm trying to just rebrand myself and do different things with the credit consulting business. What I'm aiming to do is to write a guide to help people as well as start doing webinars and seminars. Hopefully, if everything picks up the way that I hope they do. So I started doing this particular show, and I'm refocusing on credit because I felt like a lot of people, you know, they don't trust everybody. It's a lot of credit repair companies out there that say they can fix your credit for this amount of money, they can do this, and they don't do jack. Everything that they do for you, you can basically do for yourself. Now, if you don't have time to do it, of course you hire someone to do it. You know, like I said, the rich stay rich because they don't have to budget their own money. They don't have to, you know, account for what's going out and what's coming in. But if you do have time, it's not as bad as you think. And everything doesn't end in bankruptcy. So it just depends on what your income is, you know, how much expendable income you have left to do other things with. There are things called payment arrangements, settlements, things of that nature that can help you to get out of debt. And it may be a slow process for some. It's not like you're going to, you know, just jump into it and graduate. Most of my customers or clients, I tell them give it about, you know, 1 to 2 years, depending on how bad their credit is, depending on how much extra money they have to spend to fix their credit, and just depending on how they stay on top of their credit. So the first advice that I want to give everyone is to go online and pull your free credit report. You can go to www.annualcreditreport.com. That's www.annualcreditreport.com. And you can pull your credit report from all three bureaus for free, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And it's totally free. Now, you won't get your score for free. You can pay more to see your score. But I just want people to know what they have on their credit and also see how the three credit bureaus aren't always consistent. So there's something on one that may not be on another, and that's up to the consumer or you to make sure that that's right, because when you're applying for credit, you never know who's going to pull what report. So you want to make sure all three of them are consistent. You want to make sure that there's nothing on there that doesn't belong. And so that's when a dispute would come in. You would, you know, and nowadays you used to have to call the credit bureau or write a statement of dispute. But now you can actually do it online. You can go look at certain things on your credit and it'll say dispute this. And you can go and you can dispute it right online. And they have 30 days to reply to you. If they don't get back to you within those 30 days, it automatically comes off of your credit report. So, with that being said, people, go ahead to www.annualcreditreport.com and be in the know. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about today, this segment is on the FDCPA. This is one of the first things that I learned when I got into credit and collections. I was 21. I didn't know anything about credit. You know, when you get out of high school, they don't give you these financing and budgeting classes that I feel like are very much needed. Your parents usually don't talk to you about having good credit, attaining good credit, or keeping good credit. You go out there, you get your first cell phone in your name. That's credit, whether you know it or not. They don't report on a monthly basis. They report when you don't pay it, and then it turns into a collection. You go out there, get an apartment. You go get a car. you go get a credit card. And all of these things you think you could pay for, but you never look at the future and what may happen to cause you not to be able to pay for these things anymore. So what are you going to do then? You need to have some fallback money. You're going to start robbing Peter to pay Paul. You'll start crying and complaining about student loans and interest that's building up. And, I mean, it's just so much stuff that people should know coming out of high school, going into adulthood, that I feel our country fails to educate us on. And finance is the number one thing that you should definitely know about, how to take care of yourself. So if you're not getting at home, you're not getting at school, where are you getting it from? And that's the reason why I want to start doing these webinars and seminars and have this show. And I know I won't be able to cover everything that you want to talk about, but guess what? It's Blog Talk Radio. I can always set the next segment up as a continuance from the first segment. So I just want to hear your voice, and you let me know what you want to know, you know, what you think you need to know, and I'll go ahead and fill in the blanks as I go along. Get back to this FDCPA. So the FDCPA, it stands for Fair Debt Collection Practice Act. And that came about because when they first start offering credit back in the day, I don't know the year, this is not history class, I'm sorry. I do remember the Great Depression had a lot to do with credit. So when they start issuing credit out back in the day, people could come to your house, people could come to your job, people could call you any time of the day and night. They could say what they want to say. They can threaten this. They can do that. And there were no laws governing anything as far as credit and collections. But now the FDCPA says, no, we need this to be fair for the creditor, who is also usually the collector, unless they have a third-party collector, and the consumer, which is also called the debtor. So for you as the consumer and the debtor, there are things that you need to know, you know, because if you feel like you're being treated unfairly, you feel like you're being harassed, you feel like you're being annoyed, that people are threatening to do things that they really aren't going to do, the FDCPA says you can sue these companies, you can sue the individual and the company. You can stop all these harassing phone calls. There are a lot of things and ways that you can go about, you know, being comfortable about having credit and not just want to change your phone number every time your phone starts blowing up. So I wanted to touch a little bit on FDCPA and just throw out some random things that you may not have known about them. The first thing I wanted to talk about was communication of debt. So did you know that if you are in default or in debt with a company, they have to let you know with correspondence within 5 days that they receive the debt. So they have to send a letter out to you. So if you don't get the letter and you go and pull your credit and it has this company on here and you're like, what is this? And you're all freaked out, you can actually dispute that because you didn't get the letter. Now, of course, it's going to take a little while to investigate because they have to go back into their system when they sent the letter out, what address they sent it to, and blah, blah, blah. It's not up to you to worry about your mail being forwarded after 6 months. It's up to the creditor to find your correct information and send it out to you. Once they start making phone calls, that's what I really want to talk about. It can become a little hectic. So let's start off by saying, first of all, they need permission from you to talk to you at your workplace. If you have a lawyer, what else? Just any time of the day. So say you say, you can call me at 7 o'clock because I have to be at work. They have to have permission because the standard time to call is between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m., and that's your time wherever you live, whether it's Eastern, Pacific, you know, Central. It doesn't matter. Whatever time you live is 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. If you get any calls before that time or after, you can sue. Okay? So they have to identify themselves. So if they call and they say, oh, can I speak to Margaret Johnson? You say, who's calling? what is the personal business call for Margaret Johnson? No, who's calling? They have to identify themselves, especially when you ask. If they don't, you can sue them. All of this is in the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act. Okay? They have to speak to you and not a third party. So they have to make sure they have you on the phone. So they, if they call you and they say, you say hello, because a lot of collection agencies call you and they say, hey, Margaret. And you say, hey. And they say, this is the intent to collect the debt, blah, 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 blah. And that doesn't mean that that's Margaret. So they still have to identify that you're Margaret Johnson of 123 Main Street, blah, blah, blah. Because if they don't, that's a hit on them and the company if you pursue it. See, a lot of people don't know that these things are, you know, pursuable, but they really are. You know, according to the FDCPA, these are things that can get you paid if you annoy and harass. I'm not saying everybody go out there at once and just start filing, you know, suits or whatever. I'm just saying, because some collection agencies and practices are very unfair and unlawful and unethical. So another thing is, let me see. If you have an attorney and you let them know you have an attorney, usually they're going to ask you your attorney's name and phone number. That's all. And once you let them know that, they don't have any further contact with you. They have to go through your attorney again unless you give them permission to talk to you. Let's talk about, the third party thing. You know how your wife or your husband answer the phone and say, this is my wife or this is my husband. This is her husband or, you know, this is his wife. I'm sorry about that. And they start talking. That's a no-no. Some states allow that. You have to check the state that you're in. But no, you're still not the debtor. Every wife is not responsible for her husband's debt. Every husband is not responsible for his wife's debt. If they got married after the debt was assumed, then absolutely they are not responsible, so they should not be discussing it unless you have it in writing that you gave them permission to speak to your wife or you tell them over the phone and they note it on the account. So don't worry about, you know, somebody calling your husband, your wife, your cousin, your brother, all of that. If it's not you and they discuss your debt with someone else, they're in trouble. That's just like they don't supposed to leave messages on your answering machine regarding the debt. All they could say is, this is such and such calling from such and such about a personal business matter. They cannot discuss or let anyone know anything else about what's going on, because guess what? What if that's not your number anymore? Or what if you have a voicemail that people are listening to while you're sitting there having a tea party? No, they can't do any of that. So these are things to help you guys to know and understand your rights according to the FDCPA. Now, they have rights too, and we're going to talk about that Wednesday if you don't want to continue on from this particular episode. But they definitely have rights too, because they can find you if you don't want to be found. One thing that I was talking to one of my friends about earlier is, once you give them permission to pull your credit, unless you put in writing, this is the only time you can pull my credit, they can pull your credit all day, every day, find out where you at, what you doing, what you buying, who you owe money to. If you have a car payment that's due and they can't find you, they can pull your credit. They can see, oh, you just applied for a Capital One credit card. They can call Capital One and say, this person applied for credit with you. What address did they use? What place of employment did they use? What did they say their income is that they're making? They can ask all of those questions lawfully and get those answers. It's called skip tracing. That's what they do, and companies work together. And it seems like it's all about, you know, against you, but it's really not. They're just trying to help each other. And, you know, I have to say this from both ends, because as a consumer and as a collector before, I understand both sides. And I always was the type of collector that treated people the way that I would want to be treated. So I never went after anybody like I owned the company. I just talked to them, simply educated them, and let them know how it was going to affect their credit or not, or, you know, whatever they might need in the future. That was just me and my approach. So you never got a call from me. I can guarantee that. I haven't done collections in years. So, but just in case you do, if you do get a person that's nice, you know, don't give them a hard time, because they're just doing their job. But you can tell them, don't contact me at work. This is my work number. I don't care if it's your cell phone. If you use it for work purposes, you tell them, do not contact me on this number. Do you have another number I can contact you on? Well, no, not at this time. Just send correspondence, and that's all they can do is send correspondence. Or to cease communication altogether, you put it in writing. I do not want to be communicated by mail, email, text message, phone call, whatever. And the only way they can send you anything is to let you know that you have to go to court because they're taking another route collecting their money. So they will not contact you any other way. And that's why I said put it in writing, you know, send a certified letter if you have to. Some people tell you over the phone, okay, we'll take your number out, and the lies they tell because they'll call you next month. So make sure that you keep record of when you tell a certain company, get the person's name, the company name, the time and the date, stamp it, because guess what? Your phone records can verify it, and their phone records can verify it from the company if ever needed to be subpoenaed in a lawsuit. So at this time, I feel like I done talked enough, and I want to open the lines up for callers, and then we'll get back into the FDCPA a little bit to talk about false and misleading representations. So if you want to speak to me, press 1. If you have a question or anything of the sort, go ahead and press 1. Okay. I'm going to take this first caller, 757-556.
Hi.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. Hi.
If you're in a, okay, like me, I'm in a situation where I'm trying to get my credit back, right, because it was messed up from prior years.
Okay.
So when I pulled my credit report, I have a, like, I have one, like, I went to court, they took me to court, but it's satisfied. What can I do when I pay bills that's still shown on my report, but they're paid off? Like, once I get them paid off, isn't it something that I can do to get those things taken off my credit, or they still have to remain up there for 7 to 10 years, even to hospital bills? Like I had a bill for Grand. Well, you know, Grand, they'll, if you 2 months late, they'll send you to a collection. And even if you try back paying, it'll show that you have it with Sterling and you have it with Grand, so it looks like you have two or three, you know, different things going on,
right,
but, you know, it still shows. So what can you do? Because that's where I'm at. A majority of my bills are paid off, except for hospital, but I have a lot of, it's still showing things, and it's still looking bad.
Right.
So what can I do for
okay.
that?
Okay, so first of all, the double account, so even if it's Sterling or Grand or whatever they come across as, you can definitely dispute that and have them to report under one company, because it does look like it's two or three different companies that you owe money to, whether you paid it or not. So you need to dispute that and make sure that they're all coming, you know, just one company and one account. That's the first thing. The second thing is it looks bad to you because it says paid or satisfied, but think about it. When they put the debt on your credit, they had to drop your points down in your credit score. So if you delete it from your file altogether like it was never there, then it's not going to help your credit any. It only helps when you show that it's paid or satisfied. So those same points that they deducted, they'll come back and replace those points and bring your points back up once it's satisfied or it's paid, and that's the reason why they leave it there on your credit. So usually you can't have those things removed. You can ask the company. It depends on the company, really. If you want to take the time to call each company and say, can you take this off of my credit? Some are happy to do it. Some say we don't have time to do it. They're more than able to do it, but it's just up to the company. But that's the reason why it usually stays on your credit for those 7 years or whatever, because it kind of offsets, you know, when they drop your score, and the reason why, because you have these collections or debt. So they want to show that you did pay them and satisfy them. And not only that, they want a paper trail of how long it took you to pay it. So if the debt was acquired in 2005 and you didn't pay it in 2010, they want to know that. Other creditors want to know how long it took you to pay that debt.
And if you had a lot of debt during the same time and you start paying off a lot of debt in 2010, which is 5 years later, they're looking at it, okay, she came into a lump sum of money, she was being responsible, and she went ahead and paid these things. So it looks bad to you, but it's really not bad because it does bring your credit score back up once it's paid, and it shows that it's paid and satisfied.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
You did. Answer my question. I didn't know that they had it where it was an I-3 and different numbers. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. The I stands for individual. So that just basically tells you know, your individual account, not a joint account, you know, like with a spouse or somebody, or not an authorized user on somebody else's account. That's what the I stands for. The 3 usually tells you about your payment history. So if you have, you know, R1, that means you paid all your accounts on time. R2 means you might have got behind 30 days. R3, you got behind 60 days and things like that. But it's still just basically a paper trail of how you made your payments. And a lot of times once you explain to a creditor that you were going through something at that time, you lost your job, you know, and things like that, it really doesn't matter as long as it's paid in their eyes right now. And I can speak that freely because I filed bankruptcy. My credit was bad, so bad that I probably couldn't even get a cell phone at one time. And after I paid it or I filed bankruptcy on it, I turned around and the same creditor extended credit to me again. So don't think that it's just the end of the world. You know what I'm saying? Because you see these I-3s and, you know, all of that. I-9 is like a charge-off. Even with a charge-off, you can still come back and get credit from that customer again with a good payment history. It just might have to be on their terms and not yours. You know what I'm saying? But you just try to – all you can do is work one thing at a time. Just try – you know, it's baby steps. You're not going to master everything, and it's going to take a while to rebuild your good credit. So what I usually tell people is try to offset it by having some good credit to offset the bad, and then they don't even look at the bad. So you get you one or two little credit cards, even if they have to be secured credit cards, or, you know, try to apply with a company that might offer you a card, and, you know, they might have these fees, and you look like, all these fees, I ain't paying that, but you got to look at the bigger picture. So what, they charge you a $75 annual fee, they gave you $300 in credit, they're trying to help you to reestablish your credit history, which is paying your bills on time. So the bigger picture is to eventually bring your score up because you're paying your bills on time, even though you had to give them $75 for nothing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. I do.
Okay, and okay. I know who this is. I'm not going to put your name out there, but call me because I was supposed to call you last week. But call me later on today or tomorrow, and we can talk more about it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, sweetheart. Thank you. Huh? All right. So does anybody else have any questions or concerns or anything to do with the federal, you know, the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act? If not, I'm just going to keep rolling on. I see callers on the line, but nobody's pressing one, and that's okay. And the main person who told me they were going to be on the line asking a bunch of questions is not here. So we'll go ahead and keep it moving. Now, let's talk about, okay, I got a caller. Let me take this caller. 816. Hello, welcome
Hello.
To the show. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question.
Okay.
I'm doing fine, sweetie. A friend of mine, it basically took her about 10 years to get some things off of her son's credit report. And I was wondering, how is it possible for women or men to take their child or children's social security numbers and get credit cards, get bills, you know, cars, houses, properties, without the credit company being able to flag it and notice that this is a child's name that is being used that's not even over the age of 18 or 21?
Okay, that's a good question. Let me tell you. So everybody in the United States is issued a Social Security number when they're born, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. The credit bureaus are not attached to the Social Security Administration. So all it takes is for one person to go and apply for credit online in their child's name and make up a birth date that shows that they're over 18 years old, mm-hmm. and that's when their credit profile starts.
Oh wow!
Yep.
I didn't know that because
they have no way of telling how old that person really is, because you have to think they're just a credit reporting agency. That's all they do is report what is sent in
true.
To them by the creditor.
That's true, but once you start disputing it and you realize that this, okay, I have all the information, I'm talking about as far as the credit company now. You have all this mm-hmm. information, you know, the birth dates, copies of Social Security cards, a birth certificate, and it's, you know, telling you that this was a child at this time. I'm still not understanding it. Why do it take up to 10 years and sometimes more for a person to fight this?
It's the same thing with fraud. It's the same thing with fraud. It's just that it's on the company. It just depends on each company that you're dealing with on a singular basis. And it's sad because if you are a victim of, you know, fraud and somebody steals your identity, you don't know these people go through it for years and years and years until it gets fixed. And that's sad on our government, and I feel like there should be laws in place for that. And I also feel like they should have some type of check where they can check with the Social Security Administration and match up Social Security number with, you know, the person and the age and things of that nature, but they don't.
Well, I know, like, certain, like, the lights, water, gas company here in Missouri, we're going to exclude, mm-hmm. like, cable and like that. They're able to flag that. But it's like, if they're able to flag that, you know, because they are able to tell. I don't know how it pops up or how they get
information. Let me tell you why they can tell. Because they go to your place of residence. They don't actually mm-hmm. go, you know, like walk there, but they call
right.
your apartment complex or the person you're renting from, and they get a copy of the lease. The lease has the leaseholder's name on it, and it has all the tenants in the household with their ages. So that's why they can flag it. Like utility companies and things, they can flag
yes.
it because of that. They pull a copy of the lease.
Okay, I was listening to the
you know,
other
so
young
if they're
lady.
Over 18, then they're not a tenant. If they're over 18, they're a co-leaser. You know what I'm saying? So that's why they can tell the difference.
Okay, then I have one more question for you.
I thought that
anything that is like over 7 years old, that they normally mm-hmm. just automatically take off your credit because of the forgiveness program they claim to have out here.
I don't know anything about a forgiveness program. The seven-year thing is absolutely true, but, again, it's up to the consumer to go on there and check to see if it's been 7 years and dispute it. Because, again, the credit reporting agency is just the agency that reports. So if that creditor does not come back and say it's been 7 years and you could take this account off, it's just going to stay there. So you as the consumer
really?
Have to constantly be on top of your credit and go and look. And even though the debt is not on your credit report, doesn't mean you still don't owe it. And it doesn't mean they can't go and file a judgment against you and bring it all up again. It just means they can't see it, that's all.
When I say a forgiveness program, certain companies like or places that like if you owe them
uh-huh.
anything, any monies, a lot of them after 7 years have this thing called forgiveness. They just do away with your old bill. And a lot
mm-hmm.
of people don't know that either.
Yeah, a lot of companies do, but it, again, you will never know unless you contact the company or you just don't see it on your credit again. You know what I'm saying?
Okay,
because sometimes once they discharge a debt, when they discharge it and write it off, you know, on their taxes for tax purposes and things like that, then they can also sell it to a third party to come back and collect it from you, even after 7 years. If they're that hard up for the money, they will do it.
Well, I guess a lot of people going to be like my auntie say, as long as I owe your ass, you will never be broke.
Exactly. Exactly.
I was just wondering, I have to say that's one thing. It wasn't even my mother or father that taught us that, though. It was my grandfather as far as our credit goes. He said the only thing you're going to ever have in this world that, you know, is your word and your credit. So we didn't understand that until we started getting older. But I was just wondering, because I've been helping a friend of mine. She had to find an attorney, had to do a lot because her child's father had used up, you know, had basically used everything. He had some of everything in his child's name. And when he got ready to go to school to be a pilot, he couldn't because he also had, like, he even had, like, warrants and everything in his name.
Wow. Yeah.
So
that happens a lot with, you know, dads and sons that are, like, juniors and third and stuff like that, too. They'll get their credit mixed up because they got the same name, even though the Social Security number is different. A lot of companies don't pay that much attention, or they just want a reaction and they want somebody to call and say something and find out some information. So they'll just go and throw it on somebody else's credit. So that's why I'm telling everybody to just make sure that you go to annualcreditreport.com and get that free report. And you can get one updated every year without paying anything. Now, myself, I use like Privacy Guard. And I just let them take their $12.95 out a month, and I get an updated credit report every month because if I'm disputing something, I want it to be gone in 30 days. The next 30 days, it should be gone if I didn't get any correspondence from them or whatever. I want to see my credit building up, and I want to see the difference that this makes and that makes, you know, if I pay this card down. And I like to see stuff like that. So, you know, if you're like me and you want to keep a constant eye on it, or if you're about to buy a house or something like that, you should definitely be more aware of what's on your credit report. And again, the consistency in the three credit reports are not always the same. So because whoever pulls your
there's
credit.
There's not, because you can get different ones from Equifax and any, you know, you it's going to give you three different credit levels.
Yep.
One may
say that your credit is
702. The other one may say it's 620. One may say it's 5-something.
Yep, because usually if whoever they use to pull your credit, to extend credit to you, is going to be the company that they report to, and it's not always the same out of the three, you know, credit bureaus. And another thing, I'm glad we talked about inquiries. Those a lot of inquiries hurts your credit because it looks like you're trying to do too much. Usually it takes a while to get a decision. So if you're applying for 5 different things in a week time, that's going to hurt your credit because it looks like, you know, you're overextending yourself and they don't know who's actually offering you the credit and who's not. So keep those
fraud also.
Fraudulent. Yep.
Exactly. Okay, well, thanks for letting me know that. When you were speaking about that and you brought it up yesterday on a post, I was just curious, you know, because I know a lot of people, and to me that's scandalous that use their children's names up to get bills, and they don't realize in the long run when that child gets old enough and get out on his or her own, it's going to be hard for them to be able to get anything.
But think about it. These people aren't responsible because they don't care about their own credit. And most of the time they're thinking it's going to fall off in 7 years, so by the time their kid get grown, it's going to be gone anyway.
And that's not true.
And it's not.
It don't fall off in 7 years. It's supposed to, but it don't.
Right.
I know because I had one issue on mine, and my credit wasn't bad. I just had an issue with a car that was still on there that ended up getting I took it back, but they put it on my credit as a repo. It's not a repo when you take it back because they wanted the money back. I'm not paying for a car that I only had for 3 weeks and the timing belt went off. I was supposed to fix it, but y'all let it sit for 3 months. So I know
People need to start with that car stuff. You need to. There's a lemon law. It's called the lemon law, and you need to start reporting these companies to the lemon law as well. Because if you're buying cars like that and stuff is breaking down and they're not taking responsibility, I don't give a damn if it says that you bought it as is. That doesn't matter.
Well, during the point of time I bought mine, that law didn't come into effect. I think that just came into effect, what, like 8 to 10 years ago? Somewhere around there. So it wasn't even in effect then. You know, then it was buy, you know, as is. But I was, this was through a finance company. So, and you know how that goes.
I had a problem with them,
when
you're
financing the car.
Yeah, because when and it was funny because when I filed bankruptcy, I kept my car and I didn't refinance it. I just kept making the regular payments and everything. But on my report, it said that it was included in my bankruptcy. And I had the 3 months to get them to update that information because I needed that good credit history to show on my credit report to offset, you know, the bankruptcy stuff. So it took me like 3 to 4 months to get them to update the information. And then they're like, well, we have to update your payment history. And exactly. I need you to update my payment history and show that I had a good payment history with you. So when I go to get another car, I won't have a problem getting another car with a high interest rate because, you know, it looks like I filed this one on bankruptcy and 9 times out of 10, you turn it in when you file it on your bankruptcy. So people need to really pay attention, you know, to the things on their credit and not just look at it and be like, oh, my score is 500. What I'm going to do? No, your score probably 500 because you probably got 5 different people collecting for the same debt. And you know what I'm saying? And you need to narrow that down to one, get them erased off, you know, and dispute things that are not right, like the balances aren't right or, you know, whatever. If you paid it, it needs to be reflected as paid or settled or whatever. And people don't understand that. But that's why we're doing this show. So hopefully somebody learns something today.
Well, that's a good thing. Because right, and I'm sure it will because you're educating people on something that's important. People don't realize your credit is a part of your character and your integrity. You won't be able to get a damn thing without that. And if it's screwed up.
Even if you're rich, you know, it don't matter. The rich people use more credit than anybody else. You talking about they living in a $1 million house. Most of the time, they didn't pay $1 million cash. They still finance that $1 million house and have a monthly mortgage that they have to pay so that they can keep the rest of that $900,000 in their bank account.
Right, and they only include the taxes.
Girl, we ain't even going
to
talk about that. That's a whole other show because
you never
own your house. You could be,
you don't.
Let me tell you something. You could pay your mortgage off, your 30-year loan. You could pay it off and be like, oh, I you know, this is the day, taking pictures, posting on Facebook, I paid my house off. Guess what? If you ever get in a bind and you can't pay them property taxes on that house, they can come and take your $250,000 house that you spent 30 years paying for, and they can put it up for sale because you owe them $3,000. So you never
And what people don't
house.
Realize, that is called an eminent domain, where they come and take it.
Absolutely.
So that's just, you're right, that's a whole different show, honey, because there's so much
going on
with that.
It's so much going on, people don't even realize it, but that's why we're here, and that's what I'm trying to do, is to help, you know, open our eyes up to credit and, you know, things that we didn't know and things that we should and need to know, especially like, you know, I was in a group the other day and they were talking about this one girl was talking about her student loan. The student loan started off at $34,000. They paid $11,000 and something, and their balance was $35,000. How did the balance end up to be more than what it originally did, and she paid 3 years, $11,000? People don't understand. They get you with this minimum payment crap. That's the first thing. Stop making minimum payments unless you don't pay it on time. And then the interest is building up daily. So every day there's interest on that. So what I tell people to do with student loans and mortgages, if you can afford it, send an extra $25. Also, pay your mortgage weekly to get ahead. If your mortgage is $500 a month, send them $125 a week or $250 every 2 weeks when you get paid, so you can stay ahead of that daily accrual of interest, and then all your payment money is going towards the principal and not the interest. Because once the principal balance goes down, your interest is going to go down.
That's true. It's easier to do it that way, but a lot of people, that's because people don't do it because they are living above their means instead of within their needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And guess what else? They lie about the money that's going out of their household. You know, when you buy a house, they ask you everything that you're paying out, because they don't want you to live above your means. They don't want you to fall below water. But people lie. Just if it's not showing on their credit report, they ain't telling. So that's how they get in that situation. You know, you got that $110 cell phone bill that is not reporting to your credit every month. You're not telling people, I pay $110 for my cell phone. Okay? You don't tell them that you got to go to the movies and you ordering books off Amazon $100 a month. They don't know none of that.
Well, hell, I can't lie. Mine do shit.
Just be honest. You know what I'm saying? If you be honest with yourself, you will find yourself in less predicaments than you should be in. You know what I mean?
You
and
will.
We talk about
and
that
I
all
tell
the time.
People that all the time. Yep, you know it.
Absolutely.
We always say that. But thanks, Sweetie.
Yep.
You know, thank you for letting me in on that bit of information so I can just pass it on to her so she can stay on top of that. Because,
okay.
You
and
know,
let
I hate
know.
To see
you know,
people
she can
struggling
also,
when they don't have to.
Right, and you can also flag your account, you know, for fraud. You can do a consumer statement on your credit report. There's a part where you can list a consumer statement to say 2005 to 2008, I was out of my job, I was going through a divorce, and they take those things in consideration, and you can flag your account for fraud, where anytime you apply for credit, they have to contact you at the phone number that you provided on your credit report and make sure that it was you applying for credit and not somebody else. So those are all
you know,
things
I have
that
on mine anyway.
Mm-hmm. The fraud alert.
That is
yep.
what I have.
I
that, yep. That is what I have. LifeLock.
Absolutely. So
that's
we'll talk about
I
that
have,
in another
so.
Segment too. But we just covered a lot today. I didn't even get to finish the FDCPA, but we'll continue that on Wednesday about the FDCPA and the creditors, rights and things like that. So hopefully you'll tune in Wednesday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time again, and we're going to go ahead and end
you know
this
I'm going
to
be listening in. We ain't too,
you,
old. We ain't too old to be learning nothing.
I know that's right. And I ain't too, and I don't think I know everything either. So if you got any information that you want to pass on to me, let me know.
Huh?
Because I said, if you got any information you want to pass on to me, let me know, because I don't think I know everything. I'm just
and
trying
vice
to
versa.
Pass on what I know.
Okay,
so
well,
I
thank
appreciate
you, Sweetie.
Everybody.
I'm still going to be listening.
Okay, honey, thank you. All right, so the show has officially ended about 15 minutes ago, but anybody who can go to the archives can go back and listen. No one else can call in at this time. So the people who are still on the phone, if you have any questions before I end this segment, go ahead and press 1 so I can go ahead and answer your questions. And if not, we'll see you hopefully again on Wednesday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and we'll talk about the FDCPA and the creditors' rights against the consumers. And you'll learn a lot from that segment as well. And if you have any questions anytime, just hit me up on Facebook, Safia Blunt. You can also follow me on Instagram, it's at Digmatize, and you could call me, my number is 757-276-3328 if you want to have a one-on-one consultation with me And until Wednesday, you all have a wonderful, wonderful week and stay blessed. Bye.